This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The dollar doesn't buy as many pounds or euros or loonies as it used to. I just got back from a vacation in Italy where, after I finished all that mental arithmetic, I realized that I just spent $8 for a cup of coffee. Good coffee, a very nice cafe, but $8? The dollar's been falling over the past decade, but rather more quickly of late. As of today, it'll cost you almost $1.50 to buy 1 euro, $2 per British pound, and the loonie, the Canadian dollar, will cost you $1 US plus a penny. A bottle of Chilean wine is suddenly more expensive, and while Americans may gag at the price of a visit to Paris, more and more Europeans are coming stateside, and many American manufacturers are riding high. So how does the fallen dollar affect your life and your business? Our number is 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. You can also email us for the Political Junkie segment later in the program. If you've actually met or seen one of this year's presidential candidates, tell us what you thought. And Ken Rudin has a trivia question for you today. Who was the one U.S. senator who voted to oppose the Supreme Court nominations of both Thurgood Marshall and Clarence Thomas? Talk@npr.org. But first, the drop in the dollar. And we begin with Steve Banahan, sales manager of Moose River Lumber in Moose River, Maine. He joins us from the road near Bingham, Maine, which is not too far from the Canadian border. And Steve, thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How is your business being affected by the drop in the exchange rate?
Well, two things have happened. One is that we're more competitive in the U.S. versus lumber coming from Canada and both from Europe. So it's improved our ability to sell in the U.S. market, and it's also improved our ability to export into the Canadian market.
We'd heard for so many years about Canadian complaints about soft lumber imports into this country, and now the situation's reversing?
Well, just a little bit. This is the first time in probably 20 years that we've actually been able to ship our lumber into Canada because the exchange rate has been so lopsided for so long.
Mm-hmm. Have there been any negative effects?
Just a few. They can come down now. Canadian manufacturers can come down now and buy logs in Maine. They have more buying power because their dollar is now worth more than ours.
I see. So they're competing with you for American trees.
Exactly.
But the bulk of your business, though, is selling stuff that you've processed there at the plant?
Yes. We sell 90 million board feet, mostly into the U.S. market. And it's been a great relief not to be on the receiving end of a bad exchange rate.
Well, also being so close to the border there, people must cross back and forth all the time to buy whatever.
Yeah, we go across quite often, and we do a lot of shopping in Canada. But, you know, I guess that's the bad part is that our dollar doesn't go as far as it used to up there.
So you might more likely to spend it at the Walmart on this side of the border rather than the Walmart on that side of the border.
Exactly.
Uh-huh. So is this something that you anticipate extending for a while?
Yeah, from what we're hearing, that they expect the dollar to stay here for quite a while. And it has a lot to do with, I guess, how much U.S. consumers buy goods from the outside and the strong natural resource base of Canada.
Mm-hmm.
No, they don't expect it to change back the other way anytime soon.
So as far as you're concerned, hats in the air. Good news.
Very good.
All right, Steve Banahan, good luck to you.
Okay, thank you.
Steve Banahan, sales manager of Moose River Lumber in Moose River, Maine. That's one person's story about how the falling dollar affects him and his business. What about you? 800-989-8255. Email again is talk@npr.org. And Jesus joins us on the line. Jesus calling from Sacramento, California.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
I'm one of the many Mexicans that works in California.
Mm-hmm.
And during the last few months, the money that I send back home seems to last them less and less. And that's also due to the inflation in Mexico. Mm-hmm. But two things is that now my family in Mexico is starting to save money, not in dollars, but in euros.
Hmm.
And I have a couple of cousins that migrated to Montreal.
Really?
Of the States, yeah.
Yeah. That money you send back home, that's known, the technical term is remittances.
Yep.
And it's an important source of income for a lot of people in Mexico.
Well, I believe it's number one or two for the Mexican economy.
Mm-hmm. So the drop in the dollar is suddenly make all of those remittances worth a lot less.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's a real difference, and enough of a difference that your family is starting to keep that bank account in euros.
Yes, they are. They are. They have been saving euros for about a year. I'm the only. We are only two people that have migrated to the States in my family, and now I have two cousins that decided to move to Canada, and I have one that is thinking about moving to Europe.
Hmm. Well, thanks very much, Jesus, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Joining us now is Mark Zandi, chief economist for MoodysEconomy.com. He's with us from the studios at radio station WRTI in Philadelphia. Mark, good to talk to you again.
It's good to be with you, Neil.
And those are little anecdotes from, well, both borders, I guess. But generally, how has the fall of the dollar affecting the U.S. economy?
Well, I think on net, it's been a positive. And you got a sense of that from the business person in Maine. It's a real boon to U.S. business. We are exporting a lot more now overseas. Imports are coming in at a less rapid pace, and that's very positive for business. Obviously, it's not very positive for consumers who are out buying imported goods and thus have to pay more for everything from that Chilean wine that you mentioned to mm-hmm. that handbag from Italy. But on net, I think it's a positive, at least so far.
Mm-hmm. Now, for most people in this country, does it really make much of a difference?
Yeah, it does. We import 20-25% of all the goods that we can consume, and that's up quite a bit over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And so increasingly, it is more important. We all travel more globally than we used to. You went to Rome, and a lot of people traveled overseas, and you know they're feeling the ill effects of that.
Mm-hmm. I actually went to Venice, not to Rome, but that's okay.
Oh, I am sorry.
That's okay.
Venice is very expensive.
It is very expensive.
Yeah, right. I was there last summer, and I don't know, I paid $8 for a cup of coffee, but it was pretty close.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it is very important. It's one of those things, though, that we don't pay a whole lot of attention to, but it's one of those things we will pay a lot more attention to going forward because we are increasingly a more global economy.
Mm-hmm. One of the figures we always see is the trade deficit, that big number usually up in the many billions of dollars per month. Is that figure going to be affected by the change in the dollar?
It already has in a positive way. That goes to how businesses are benefiting. The trade deficit ballooned through the first half of the decade. It stabilized in 2006, and it has actually improved quite a bit in 2007, which is very important for the economy because of the housing downturn. And the improvement in the trade deficit has offset, not completely offset the drag from the housing downturn, but has mitigated it to a significant degree. So the trade deficit is improving. It's moving in the right direction, and all indications are that that will continue to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Now, might this make American companies more attractive to foreign buyers?
Yes, that's also happening. The United States looks like it's bargain basements on sale for many European investors, for the British, even the Canadians. You know, they just bought a local bank here, Commerce Bank, TD, which is a big Canadian financial institution. So the U.S. does look cheap, so we are getting a lot more foreign investment in this country. And some of it is financial investment in stocks and bonds. A lot of it's real investment, and ultimately that creates jobs, which is very positive.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Sheila. Sheila's calling us from Boston, Massachusetts.
Hi.
Hi, Sheila.
Hi. I just got back from Europe myself where I was paying $8 for a cup of coffee in Stockholm and $8 for a cup of coffee in Tuscany. And I just wanted to say that in my business, I'm a consultant for Americans and some Brits who are looking to buy homes, second homes mostly, in Italy. My company is called Italy House Scout. It used to be before the institution of the euro back with the old lira that it was bargain basement in Italy for such transactions. But now it's becoming a lot pricier, so that is definitely affecting the number of people that are looking to do that.
How much would you say your business is off?
You know, it's hard to say so far. I just definitely get less inquiries within the last, you know, this last summer than I did in the past few years.
Mm-hmm. And is this a worrying trend? I would assume it'd have to be.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm a small business. I have enough customers to keep me busy still. But I would say that overall, people in this business are feeling a pinch.
Well, maybe you could interest some Europeans in homes on in the rustic Hamptons.
Possibility.
Good luck to you, Sheila.
Thank you.
much.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can also now go to, this is Nathan. Nathan's calling us from Syracuse, New York.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing well. I was just going to comment on this, that we are here in Syracuse at the Carousel Center Mall, and we sell sleep number beds. We've seen an increase of people coming from Ottawa and coming in from Quebec, telling us, you know, we can buy it here cheaper than we can buy it there. And they are anxious to do that. So, You know, it increased our business, which is kind of sad to say that the low cost of the American dollar has increased your business. But, hey, we're not complaining.
Mark Zandi, you would think that businesses along the border, like Syracuse, New York, they would particularly benefit from this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we used to not see so many people from Canada, or they'd come down and they'd be like, oh, it's just too much money because their dollar wasn't equal to our dollar.
Right.
I've been working on this company for a year or so, and even just last year, I don't think I saw hardly anybody come in. But recently, we've just had, just this week, I've had three of them come in. So
really? Mark, that local effect, is that can be important in a place like Syracuse.
Oh, absolutely. And this is particularly important in a part of the country that's been very depressed. You know, the Michigan economy, the upstate New York economy, parts of upper parts of New England. So this can be very beneficial to those areas of the economy. And in fact, one of the reasons why those regions have suffered for so long is because up until recently, the dollar was very strong. But now with a weaker dollar, it's helping. And just one other point about the woman in Europe and selling property in Europe. We are seeing a lot of foreign buyers, particularly Europeans, buy housing here in the United States in some of the depressed housing markets like Miami, for example, New York City, Boston, San Francisco, L.A. are all benefiting to some degree from the strong foreign buying.
All right, Nathan, thanks very much for the call. Good luck to you. And we'll be back with Mark Zandi in just a minute. Stay with us. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. How is the weak dollar affecting your life and your business? I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We got this email from David in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm the chair of a university department of modern languages, and I can tell you the falling value of the U.S. dollar does affect my work. My colleagues and I encourage students to pursue study abroad, and these programs have become more expensive with the decline of our currency. Logically, there is a proportional increase in living expenses overseas with the lower exchange rates. Students who are already struggling to finance international study are finding it more difficult than ever before, and many lose valuable linguistic and cultural experiences as a result. So how is the drop in the value of the dollar affecting you? I guess that depends on who you are. To help out, we've posted a guide on to whether a weak dollar is reason to celebrate or worry at our website, npr.org/talk. Mark Zandi is with us. He's co-founder and chief economist for moodyseconomy.com. And if you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can read what other listeners have to say at our blog, npr.org/blog of the nation. And Mark Zandi, as you look ahead to this, those cultural exchanges, the value of that is hard to gauge, but I guess that cuts both ways. More students could come to this country to study.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Maybe it would be worthwhile bringing some of those students overseas here. I think that would help improve the cultural level of educational institutions. And it's interesting, one of the most significant sources of export is the educational services we provide to foreign students, and that will only be enhanced by this now lower value of the dollar. So, you know, it does cut both ways, but in this case, I think there's some ways to get some benefit out of what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Why is the dollar falling?
For a number of reasons. Most significantly, the U.S. economy is soft. It's weak. It's being hurt by the problems in the housing market, the mortgage market, the subprime financial shock, the turmoil in our financial system. Global investors are a bit nervous about what's going on here. And overseas, the economies are very strong. It's not unprecedented to see such broad-based global growth, but it's certainly unusual. So you combine a weaker U.S. economy with a very strong global economy, and that puts pressure on the dollar. That's the main reason and the principal reason why it's down. It's also obviously weak because we have been running this very large trade imbalance, trade deficit, and most recently that's been with the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And that large trade deficit also is playing a role in causing the dollar to fall in value.
Let's talk with Jerry. Jerry's calling us from Dayton, Ohio.
Yes, sir. I'm kind of confused. I'm just an old country boy working a regular job. Now, I hear businessmen calling in saying it's kind of great for them. They're making money over money. But at the same time, we're admitting that the consumer, which is an old fellow like me, dollar ain't worth a nickel much no more. Now, and then on top of that, you tell me, well, that's a good thing. Kind of like the rich getting rich and the poor getting poorer. Am I very far off base?
Mark Zandi, what do you think?
Well, it's like Sam Irvin saying, I'm only a country lawyer. There's always a lot of wisdom in those comments. There are certainly winners and losers in the falling value of the dollar, and you pinpointed them quite nicely. The winners are business people, companies. The losers are those consumers who are out buying imported goods. They're going to lose because they have to pay more for it. But when you get right down to it, what's most important for a consumer, whether they have to pay a bit more for a sweater or for a handbag, whether they have a good-paying job, and I think they take the job. And if business people,
them folks that take them businesses overseas and make all that money, do they share that wealth back here? I don't see that happening. So the poor are still getting.
No, I think what he's saying, Jerry, is that American businesses are doing better because they can export more overseas because the dollar's worth less, and those exports are now worth a lot more money.
Now, yeah, that's right.
Does that equate back to the American consumers? What my question is, I don't see it coming back to the American consumer. The business, yes, I understand that, but mm-hmm. I still don't see that. I guess it'd be Ronald Reagan trickle down if you want to go that way, but I don't see that still coming back to me and my family.
Well, the cost of living could go up a bit, right, Mike?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely true. It does cost more, but Jerry, think about it this way. If I'm a business person, say I'm I didn't catch where you are in the part of the country. Where do you live?
Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio. In Dayton, Ohio, there's a lot of manufacturers. They sell their goods all over the world. If the manufacturers in your neighborhood is in your part of the country is now able to sell more to Europe and to Canada, they'll go out and hire more workers. And it's more likely that they will hold on to the workers that they have, give them a bigger pay increase. And so they'll be able to go out and spend a little bit more, buy a bit bigger house, maybe take a vacation. And so it will benefit the folks that work for that company. It's a benefit.
I should equate General Motors wanting to go overseas and all these other companies wanting to move overseas, move their whole company overseas, basically, which a lot of them have done and shut down factories. I should equate that with being a good thing for me.
Well, that's not quite the same thing. So, but
No. And in fact, the lower dollar makes it more likely that GM and other foreign producers like Toyota and Honda and Volkswagen are going to produce here in the United States because now it's much cheaper to produce here in the U.S. than it is in Europe or Canada. So, in fact, it's more likely that we'll see fewer imported vehicles and more production of vehicles here as a result of this, if it were to continue to persist. In fact, I was just picked up a news story today. A senior executive of Daimler was saying that if the euro stays at 145 for very long, and that's where we are roughly now, that they will have to seriously consider producing more cars here in the United States, which obviously means more jobs and more income.
Well, joining us now is Sam Zuckerman, who a senior correspondent for the San Francisco Chronicle, who wrote a story that's just about spot on this topic. He joins us now from the studios at the San Francisco Chronicle in San Francisco, unsurprisingly. Sam, thanks very much for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
And your article focused on, well, you know, those American jobs that used to be outsourced, they're not so attractive to outsourcers anymore.
It's costing a lot more money to produce software in India now. The rupee is one of the currencies that's risen against the dollar. $1 will now get you 39 rupees. Less than a year ago, it was about 45. That's a 13% drop. So it's suddenly become 13% more expensive to do technology work in places like Bangalore.
Mm-hmm. You wrote about one particular business in particular in, am I pronouncing this correctly, Pune?
I'm a writer. I don't have to pronounce things, so
okay.
I'm not exactly sure how it's pronounced.
Well, anyway, tell us what that business is going through.
Well, This is a very small shop of software developers, and they had an exclusive contract with a company in Santa Clara in Silicon Valley to produce the software that runs the Santa Clara company's website. The Santa Clara company's a startup. It doesn't have a lot of money to throw around. Mm-hmm. And I guess when the contract came up for renewal, the software developers in India asked for a raise, essentially, just to compensate for the drop in the dollar. They went from $22 an hour to $25 an hour for their services. Now, anybody who buys software in the United States knows that's still a fraction of what it costs to produce software here. But still, for a small company in Silicon Valley just trying to get started, a little bump up like that hurts.
And as it continues to work away at the margins, there's a friction in this outsourcing too. All of these difficulties start adding up.
Well, this is, of course, the movement of technology jobs to places like India became one of the prime symbols for globalization in the earlier part of the decade. And there was a lot of hand-wringing about American high-end American jobs being lost. That did happen. But as the situation develops, we find a much more complicated situation. Mm-hmm. And one of the effects is that some of the larger Indian companies are actually stepping up their hiring of American software workers and developers.
Who are suddenly a little bit less expensive.
Who are suddenly on sale.
Mm-hmm. So this is roiling that assumption that we made about shipping jobs offshore.
Yeah, Mark Zandi was talking about some of the complicated cross-cutting effects, and the technology world certainly illustrates those.
Indeed, that the Indian companies are now looking to outsource some of their work in cheaper labor markets like China.
I talked with one company, which is actually an American company, but that has most of its production workers in India, and they had recently bought a software company in China. And they plan on growing its headcount there from about 200 to 500 in the next couple of years. So
I think that same company had an office in Boston and was expanding that too.
They're expanding in Boston. And so this is, when we talk about the complicated effects, this is exactly it, is that this is a global industry. And the smarter companies are just constantly looking, where is the best place in the world for me to accomplish this task?
Mm-hmm. And is this a matter of international prestige? Is a country's economy measured by the value of its currency?
I don't know whether it's a matter of international prestige, but I do know that it's fair to say that the overall clout of the United States in the world economy is diminishing, as we would expect it would. It was not possible for the world economy to be just an extension of the American empire indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
But sure, this is happening very much in the technology field, where we see a company like India becoming increasingly sophisticated. Its industry started doing very simple programming tasks, and now they're doing increasingly sophisticated tasks. It's a little bit like what happened with Japan in manufacturing after World War II. Started with toys and transistor radios and ended up with automobiles and very complicated machinery.
Well, let me bring Mark Zandi back in on that point. Obviously, as Japan developed and got much more sophisticated, they became better customers for American products, too. If those other countries are catching up, this is a win-win proposition, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that you're exactly right, Neil. I mean, I think in the case of China, for example, their middle class is now growing and developing. The stronger yuan will allow them to be better consumers, more powerful consumers. And some of the things that they're going to buy are the things that we produce. And that's going to be very, very positive for our economy. So I do think that is a benefit.
And Sam Zuckerman, you, I guess, especially focus on companies there in California and down in Silicon Valley. So they're able to sell more of their goods to places like India and China.
They already are racking up a very large proportion of their sales around the world. Technology is one of the most thoroughly globalized industries, but it does get very complicated. If you think of, say, a company like Cisco, sure, it's selling more routers and similar devices around the world, it's much more competitive. At the same time, though, Cisco has very extensive operations in India. They wouldn't answer exactly when the question was posed exactly how much more it costs them, but it's a pretty fair assumption that unless they cut everybody's salaries, those Indian operations are costing them 13% more.
At least. Anyway, Sam, thanks very much for coming in.
Sure.
Sam Zuckerman, senior correspondent with the San Francisco Chronicle. He writes about money and the economy in the Bay Area with us from the studios at the San Francisco Chronicle. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's get Susan on the line, and Susan's calling us from Birmingham in Michigan.
Hi, how are you, Neil?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, I'm a small business owner, and I'm calling from the opposite perspective of what your guest is talking about as far as the impact on business. All of the raw materials that we use for the line of accessories that we, women's accessories that we sell, are all produced overseas. There is no production for raw materials, so I've seen my raw material costs go up about 38%.
And what kind of raw materials are you importing?
Fabric. Mostly fabric, trims, crystal beads, glass beads, all of that's made overseas. There's no one that makes it here in the States.
So there's no alternate supplier here in this country who you could go to?
Not at all. Everything comes from overseas. Most of it comes from Europe. A little bit of it comes from Malaysia. Some fabric, obviously. But we don't have a textile industry here anymore, so I don't even have anybody I could turn to in the States and purchase materials from. We don't produce crystal or glass beads here in the United States. So I've got nowhere to buy them. So I've had the opposite. My margins are killed. I don't honestly know how we're going to be able to sustain business because, especially in Michigan, as far as the retailers that we sell our products through and we service through, it's in the Midwest, the economy here is horrendous. And I'm in kind of a niche industry, but I also have a cousin who's in an automotive-related industry, and he's seen, same thing, his raw materials cost more money. So the only way that we've been able to sustain our businesses is layoffs, salary cuts. He and I both have been business owners for over 20 years. We haven't taken a paycheck in 3 years. There's a very big downside, especially to small businesses or especially to companies that need to bring in raw material.
Mark Zandi, as you said, the winners and losers.
Yeah, this is the case where it's certainly a significant negative. If you are a big importer, if you need those raw materials and things like fabric from overseas, it's going to cost a lot more. And if you're in the very unfortunate situation where you can't pass along those higher costs to your customers in the form of higher prices, then you've got a problem. It's going to be very, very difficult. And her problem seems particularly dire because she's right. It's going to be hard to find a U.S. producer to produce those materials. Now, I think it will be the case, however, that if the dollar remains weak for an extended period, you will see companies begin to produce the kinds of things that she needs because they'll know there's an opportunity there that, you know, people are ultimately going to want to buy the things that she produces at a reasonable price. And so they will start up some of those old factories that have been shut down in the Carolinas that used to produce things like fabric and beads. So that could happen. But, yeah. I mean, this is a good case in point where, you know, there are losers. People are getting really hurt. And and clearly this is one of those cases.
Good luck to you, Susan.
Thank you very much.
Hey, well, here's an email we got from a lieutenant commander named Daniel, who's posted overseas. I was there for the good times when the euro was established and 1.20 euro would buy a dollar. Now it's more than reversed, leaving our servicemen and women pinching pennies and shopping only on military bases. It forces our best ambassadors to become insular and leaves what should be a career highlight an ordeal. Our COLA is always, that's cost of living adjustment, is always too little, too late. So there's another element, Mark Zandi.
Yeah. If you are if you're overseas and you're getting paid in dollars, if you're a tourist headed overseas, particularly to Europe or Canada, it's going to be more difficult.
Hang on to your
wallet.
Dollars
aren't going to go. Right. Hang on.
Mark Zandi, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Mark Zandi, chief economist at MoodysEconomist.com, with us today from WRTI in Philadelphia. Coming up, Fred Thompson's debut, new poll numbers in Iowa, and a push to draft Al Gore. Our political junkie joins us, and he has that trivia question we mentioned earlier. Who was the one U.S. senator to vote against the Supreme Court nominations of both Thurgood Marshall and Clarence Thomas? Email us, talk@npr.org, and give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.